Welcome to the Outdoor Dream Jobs podcast. I'm Allie Carr.
And I'm Jenna Selmer. We run Basecamp, an online community of nearly 20,000 outdoor industry insiders who share jobs, industry contacts, and advice. We are so close to 20,000, which would be a very fun milestone to hit in 2020 when nothing else good seems to be going on. So if you listen to the podcast and you're not part of the group, which many people describe as the only reason they go to Facebook, get in there, invite your outdoorsy friends that want to live their best life. The link is right in outdoordreamjobs.com, or you can go right to Facebook and just search Basecamp Outdoor Jobs and More. And you can get in.
And I'm going to tell you about our interview in a second, but if you hear a little baby in the background, that's my baby. She is making lots of little coos and noises. So hopefully she won't cry too much, but
she loves attention. Directly when we start the podcast, she is really part of the operation now.
But
and we love her.
Besides interviewing my baby, today we're interviewing Mitsu Iwasaki, the CEO of American Alpine Club, which has two open positions that they'll be hiring for. And we'll also learn what it's like to work for them in Boulder, Colorado. But before we get into the jobs that we are going to highlight this week, I just wanted to say that these positions from American Alpine Club are pretty cool. One of them in particular makes me totally nostalgic for the freedom of my 20s, before kids, when you could kind of move all over, but can't wait to talk about it.
Before that, we do have seven jobs for you though. So we're going to hop right into those. And the first one is with PGM1. It is a remote position. If you haven't heard about PGM1, they are really seeking environmental justice and collective liberation. And what they're doing is trying to empower those most impacted by environmental harm, as well as climate change. And typically that is Black people, Indigenous people, people of color, often women as well. So this organization is incredibly important and helpful. And they are hiring for a development and operations director. So this person is going to help them lead fundraising efforts and probably some strategy. They're going to be part of the leadership team. Like I said, this is a remote position and the salary is listed at $50,000 to $55,000 a year. So a really wonderful position for somebody that wants to make a very big difference, not only, you know, just in their job and in their local region, but truly across the globe.
That's awesome. The next position we have is with Tompkins Conservation. They are based in Ventura, California. If you're not familiar with Tompkins, these are a former CEO of Patagonia, who is a couple who've created this incredible business or nonprofit. They have bought millions of acres across Chile and Argentina to create a whole new park system down there in South America. Just stunning land. And they have an open executive office administrative associate position. So it's an administrative position that would be, you know, really supporting this team who is working to conserve the land in South America down there. So pretty awesome position. You know, I think getting in with this organization at an administrative level would definitely give you potential to move up and work, you know, at a higher level.
Allie tagged me immediately when she saw this, so you know it's a dream job when that happens.
And I have a friend who used to do PR for Conservation Patagonica, which was their nonprofit when they were mainly working on Patagonia, and she got to go down there all the time. And post drool-worthy content from their national park down there. So, yeah, you never know where this one could lead you.
Oof. Okay. Mountain Recreation in Edwards, Colorado is also looking for an outdoor recreation supervisor. They're located in Eagle County, Colorado, which is like Breckenridge, Vail, that little corridor there, and they provide opportunities for recreation for residents or visitors to that area. They have huge facilities. They have an absolute ton of programs that they try to make both affordable and accessible for everyone. And this position is for an outdoor recreation supervisor. It is in conjunction with SOS Outreach, and it's a year-round outdoor rec program. You are going to be really supervising rec programs. You're going to be making sure that kids get outside, people get outside. And the salary was pretty good. It's $52,500 for a full-time role, where you really are going to be working indoor and outdoor. And I know that so many people that want to work in this industry, they want that aspect of actually being outside, actually climbing, and actually having a role with the spaces that brought them to the industry in the first place.
The next job that we have is with Rome Media. And if you're not familiar with Rome, they have online classes from some of your favorite athletes out there in the industry, and also photographers and content creators. So athletes like Corey Richards, Jimmy Chin, Sasha DeJulian, Travis Rice. I mean, they really have an amazing roster of athletes here creating content and teaching classes about, you know, basically what they do. And so the position that they have is in Boulder, Colorado. It's a social media manager, which is pretty cool. So thinking about how do you turn that content that these athletes are creating and, you know, turn it into social media posts that bring people in, make them want to sign up for these classes. So there's a lot of brand partnerships, influencer synchronization, tracking, analyzing, and reporting on KPIs. So of course you'll be creative and be able to create, you know, content from what these athletes are making, but also, you know, making sure that you are doing reporting and thinking about this from a data standpoint as well.
It looks like a really fun job. And if you go to their website, it's a lot of great people, a lot of white people. So
that's true.
We'd love to see that diversified a little bit.
Yeah. And the salary there is $45,000 to $65,000 per year. So decent salary for somebody who potentially doesn't have a whole lot of experience. I think this could be, you know, a couple years under your belt, could probably get you in the door.
Yeah. Working with great people, though.
Yes.
Say again.
Yes.
Okay. So another remote position, International Mountain Biking Association is hiring. They are based in Boulder, Colorado, but they have a completely remote culture with their team. So that's super good to hear. If you don't know what they do, I'm going to read this right from their site because I can articulate it better. They create, enhance, and protect great places to ride mountain bikes. They also do a lot with stewardship, and they want people to be responsible on the trails. And they also have community-based clubs and collectives, things of that nature. So what they're looking for is a digital projects coordinator. And for this role, they have earmarked $40,000 to $45,000. The person would not need to have too much experience, about 2 to 3 years. It's a very mixed bag of responsibilities here. You're going to be doing a lot with the website and with the CRM. You're also going to be doing some stuff with training materials. It looks like everything digital in the organization, you're going to be helping with various individuals and teams to just make a little bit of a more streamlined process and be taking care of some of the things that, from what this looks like, other people are like, we can't do this. This is not part of our main role. And we need somebody to really help kind of just come in and piece everything together for us. So looks like a really super cool job. Again, the remote thing I'm super into. And they also state that they have a very generous pay time off policy. So that sounds great.
Awesome. Got to give their employees some time to get out there on their own bikes, of course, to keep the morale up. The next position is at Culture Seed in White Salmon, Washington. Culture Seed is a nonprofit organization that serves youth and communities in the Columbia Gorge region of the Pacific Northwest. They basically aim to create connection to nature and to yourself and to others through outdoor recreation. And the cool part about their company that I love is they have an incubator for community programs that foster access and wellness. So, you know, they are not only serving their local region, but also trying to create more programs elsewhere that offer, you know, the same kind of benefits to society. And the job that they have there is an outdoor program director slash coordinator. So they are looking for somebody to direct the programming in the outdoors with the youth that they bring in. So what sort of activities should the youth be doing? How can we, you know, really inspire them and help them connect to themselves in nature? So it's a cool kind of strategy position and also, you know, tactical position if you have experience in the outdoors. And the pay is $25 to $30 per hour. And I think that, you know, they are sort of open to anything from coordinator to director level, depending on the experience of the person coming in. So it seems like a cool position.
Mm-hmm. And our last job today is with the North Face. I'm not going to introduce them. You know who they are. This is an entry level position, which is really fun. And it is a e-commerce content coordinator. So I think it would be actually an excellent position based in Denver, Colorado. And this person, they would like 1 year of experience in the digital realm, but you don't need to have experience in this precise role. But essentially, you're going to be working with the e-commerce site for TNF. So if you go to thenorthface.com and do any shopping and you see those product photos and just the way the website is laid out, all the content on that website, you're you're helping coordinate that. You're working with merchandisers and you're working with the digital team and the content manager, and you're doing some writing, you're doing some updating and maintaining, you're doing a little bit of website maintenance, it looks like, as well. But very fun job. Again, these entry-level roles where you can get in and really find what your skill set is and maybe move to a role that suits you best. This is the way to do it in this industry. I imagine there's going to be a ton of applications for this one. I would recommend that you get yours in early and you get it in very, very targeted for this specific role if you'd like a shot.
Yeah, and definitely use all your avenues. You know, find connections on LinkedIn. Find the position on LinkedIn. See who posted it. Try to make inroads with the recruiter. There's so many ways now to just go that extra step when you do find a dream position. So
yeah. And certainly if your values align with the North Face, make that known in a cover letter, make that known in your LinkedIn feed. We did an interview with the North Face a couple of weeks back on Outdoor Dream Jobs, which you should certainly check out if you want to apply for this one too.
Awesome. All right, let's head over and talk to the American Alpine Club and get you all that information on those dreamy jobs that they have.
Okay. We are here with Mitsu. Mitsu, could you please introduce yourself? Let us know who you are, where you are, and who you are working for.
Sure. My name is Mitsu Iwasaki. I'm the new CEO at the American Alpine Club, and our offices are here in Golden, Colorado.
Awesome. We are so excited to have you. How long have you been the new CEO?
Just under 4 months, I think.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah, somehow time feels like it stopped since March, but about 4 months. And I came from Portland, so yeah, it was really interesting to make a job transition and a move in the midst of a pandemic.
So you're super fresh at the role, and I want to hear all about how that transition went and where you were before. But first, can you tell everyone a bit about the American Alpine Club?
Yeah, of course. The American Alpine Club, we are a 501c3, formed about 118 years ago, really to inspire and to inform, I would say, cutting edge climbing. And also as part of that, maybe to inform and maybe test what human capacity might be. And also as part of our bylaws and charter, we are here to protect our climbing landscapes. We're national in scope. We have a presence through 80 chapters and sections around the country. And we work in maybe three broad categories of education, community, and policy. Within community, I think of it as we unite climbers. We've got events across the country. We operate campgrounds and lodges in Waco, Remini, New River Gorge, Gunks, and Grand Teton. And we have a small shack-like thing up in Alaska. We have a library and archives, which I understand to be possibly the largest in North America here in Golden. And
oh,
we have
cool.
And it doesn't get much use. So if your listeners want to come in and check out the library after the COVID pandemic, that would be awesome.
I actually want to come in and check it out.
Please
so
do.
I'll be in touch. Yeah.
Wait, so is that open to the public or is that something that you have to like make an appointment? Tell us more.
It is open to the public. We have about 80,000 volumes downstairs in this building. About 40,000 of those books are actually not allowed to leave the organization because they're rare. So just show up anytime when we're open and find Katie the librarian and have her show you around.
Amazing. Okay,
yeah,
thank you.
Yeah, and the rare books collection is stunning. So yeah, absolutely, please come and visit. Within community, we also have a granting program. So we have the Cutting Edge Grant, Live Your Dreams Grant, the Grief Fund, and a new one that we will be launching sometime around February or March called the Catalyst. And that's kind of like the Live Your Dreams Grant, where we just want mostly BIPOC and LGBTQ+ folks to tell us what their dreams are and let us help you make that happen. In the education bucket, we are working with the Mountaineers, the CMC, the Colorado Mountain Club, the Mazamas to develop kind of national standards for volunteer-based climbing education with a UIA endorsement on that. We have a grassroots education program through our sections and chapters, and we have our publications, Accidents in North American Climbing, American Alpine Journal, and we also support the Sharp End podcast. And then in our policy space, you know, we're focused on protecting our climbing landscapes. We partner with the Access Fund for the annual Climb the Hill event to affect policy in D.C., we have a policy zine, and this year we did this thing called Send It to the Poles to try to help climbers get to the poles. And at this moment, I think our policy committee is actually engaged in the strap planning session to figure out what our next 5 to 10 years of policy priorities might be. So that's a little bit about the American Alpine Club.
Wow, that is a massive amount of responsibility and impact for one organization to have. I'm curious, how did the move from Portland over to Colorado happen? How did you get this role? What made you interested in it?
I have been in the outdoor industry, I suppose, for I don't know, since my 20s, so almost 30 years at this point. Well, I started it in van life. I spent a decade living in a car or in a van, climbing up and down the West Coast, and always, I've been a member of the American Alpine Club since the early 90s, and always had wanted to work here. And yeah, during the pandemic, Phil announced his Phil Powers, the former CEO, announced his resignation, and somehow the search committee found my name and reached out and asked if I wanted to be part of the candidate pool, and I said yes.
What was your background before, what were you doing before they asked you to be CEO?
10 years into my into being just a, I'm just gonna call it a dirtbag climber and skier. Eventually, I recognized that this is not a career, and I actually wanted to move out of my van and into an apartment or a house or some such, and just call my van transportation and not home. And so I went back to school, recognizing that I didn't actually have a lot of skills outside of being an outdoorsy person. And then after going back to grad school, I came back to Outward Bound. I worked a few years as an Outward Bound instructor and worked around one of their mergers, and then went to work as the executive director of the, or I'm sorry, went to work with the Big City Mountaineers as their operations director. I did that for 5 years and then transitioned to the Northwest Outward Bound School as their executive director. Transitioned out of that role about 2 years ago and spent, about 6 months off just living my dream again and being a climber skier. And then went to work for the Mazamas, which is a climbing club based in Portland. And then from there, I kind of jumped on to becoming the CEO of the American Alpine Club.
I love this story because it shows that you can make the choice, at times to leave the working world and pursue passions for a little while, make that feasible and then go back to work. It doesn't have to be, I think people get caught up in this idea that a career has to be on one trajectory, and that's just not true. Like you can do whatever you want. I mean, obviously that's a privileged opportunity, but yeah, just to recognize that you can come and go and still, I think people will value your passion for leaving and doing what you want and following your dream and then going back to work.
Yeah, I think you're exactly right. And I don't know for other people, but for me, it was really important to take some time off to kind of rebalance my life and re-engage with those activities that I really love. Because, after 6 years at the helm of Outward Bound, I'm not getting out, and in some ways it becomes, well, or at least I started becoming disassociated with those activities, and re-engaging and just being able to climb and ski was a really great way to refresh and re-energize.
That's amazing. Were there any skills in particular that you found in going from that more nomadic lifestyle to a more career-oriented lifestyle that you really had to brush up on or would recommend somebody else making the same hop to do?
I was great at clipping carabiners and making turns. But I honestly, I didn't know how to read a financial statement well. I had an idea, but not really. I didn't know how to forecast things. I didn't really know how to make budgets and whatnot. So, yeah, to make that transition, it was a conscious choice. And had clarity that I actually wanted to lead and manage nonprofits, but needed to go back to school and with that recognition that I can't simply just make that transition without education and mentorship.
Did you go for your MBA or what did you go back to school for?
Yeah, I have MPA in
Master of Public Administration? Oh,
focused
that's what I
in.
have.
Yeah,
Excellent.
focused in managing nonprofits because it's what I wanted to do.
Excellent. And all of those things that you just mentioned with the forecasting and the budgeting and the financial documentation, I've had to do that in every single job I've had, including internships. And so it's something that, yeah, it's not really brought necessarily in a job description all the time, but it seems to be one of those things that you're just expected to do. And if you can do it really well and just come to the table with those skills and maybe even say them up front, that might give you that edge. But you're certainly going to feel more confident in a role, I feel, if you have an understanding basically of those things. things.
Right. And I think, at least in our industry, or at least in the spaces that I've occupied, we have this core belief that we can learn these things on the job. And I think we want people to hire us for our potential. But I don't think it's actually necessarily true that going back to school or getting education or finding a mentor to help teach these things to us ultimately makes us more capable employees or capable professionals.
And like you said, there's lots of mediums to get that. That could look like mentorship. That could look like a formal MBA program. That could look like a certificate class. Just some sort of educating yourself or shipping up your skills in some way. Can you also tell us now that we know a little bit more about your background, what it's like working there now? You've only been there 4 months, but can you tell us a bit about the culture and some of the things that you just are in love with at this new place?
Yeah, that's a really interesting question because being 4 months here and being in the midst of a pandemic, I haven't actually even met all of our staff. Yeah, I think it was about 2 months into this job, I was walking out of the American Mountaineering Center and there was a woman walking in and I just said hi and I was just kept walking out and she stopped me and said, "Hey, my name's CJ. I'm your major gifts officer." And I was like, "Oh my God, I didn't even recognize what you look like." So it's been really interesting. What I can say is that, across the board, everyone here is really engaged and really professional, and they know what they're doing, and they're passionate about the work, and they're passionate about climbing, but also really just being outdoorsy people. We are in transition with me as at the helm now. But with that said, we have an organization that is highly flexible. I'm more interested in measuring people's productivity than the time at their desks. And I'd say that we're transitioning more into kind of what I might call servant leadership. I think of myself as a tool for everyone. I'm not interested in dictating anything. Let's collaborate. Let's come up with solutions together and ideas together. And tell me what you need from me, and I will try to figure out how to get the resources you need.
Okay, so it sounds like there are very open models of communication within the organization. If you need something or if you're unhappy, you'd like somebody to speak up.
Absolutely. And I would say that we're transitioning to that, right? That hasn't always been the case. We've had, not with malintent, but we've had an organization in the past where we've built the organization in kind of silos and less communication between each of those departments. So we're working on flattening that and putting more processes into place where we have, I would say, more robust communications with each other, but also finding that challenging in the midst of a pandemic, right? We're all on Zoom calls. And trying to build new communication channels in the middle of a pandemic seems really difficult.
And trust within new leadership as well, within a pandemic and within a digital universe, would be a very different dynamic than many are used to.
Right. I don't know that I've explicitly shared this with our team, but what I'm hoping for is that they, extend their faith to me for the moment, and then we build trust over time. Because you're absolutely right. Like, how do you extend your trust to someone maybe that you've actually never even met?
And what about diversity initiatives? Can you tell us any existing in the organization now or that you'd like to place on the horizon?
Yeah, we are looking at diversity and equity as a very important component. And I think of it both in terms of what we're doing within the organization and how we impact the world outside of us. Within the organization, our board has been working, I would say, have been making progress over the last decade. We've got a more diverse board. They have memorialized it as a priority through a vote just a few months ago. Within the leadership team, Misha Charles is a Black woman. She's our chief program officer. I'm Asian. And so the board is very conscious in starting to make some changes here. We also know and recognize at this point this organization was, let's say, optimized for mostly white males. And again, not with malintent, but that's who it was optimized for the 120 years or 100 years. And so we're looking at processes and bylaws and documents that are excluding other people. So for instance, if we look at our committees and how they're set up, the board committees, they don't necessarily have term limits. So we've had the same individuals running committees and delivering awards for the last 20 years. And, again, not with malintent, but they're awarding it to the people that they know and the circles that they know, rather than being able to see a broader slice of the climbing community. So we're looking at these things and asking, well, how can we change them to become more inclusive or have broader perspective for ourselves.
That's wonderful. That sounds like some really impactful work that is really tangible, which is so great to hear, because I think that a lot of companies have really good intent, but hearing the tangible steps that are being taken is really, you know, something that we don't get a lot of. So thank you for that.
Yeah, absolutely. And also with on the staff side, right, we're starting to change our HR structures and practices so that, that it's broader. And, you know, we're thinking about how we write our roles and our new job descriptions or position descriptions and how we socialize or the channels that we get them out from. You know, and I think we're starting to understand that, you know, diversity and equity isn't simply about having different faces in the organization. I think we're starting to understand, or at least I understand, that it's also about how we share power and who has control of things like agendas and budgets and whatnot and what our impulses are. So, yeah, it's not for us at this point. It's not about just changing the faces. It's about sharing power and asking about processes and how we change all this.
How big is your team right now?
I think we're 22-ish.
Oh, okay. That's actually smaller than I thought it would be. You're doing a lot with right. a few people. Wow. Okay.
Right. We've got a really strong, capable team folks doing a lot.
Yeah.
Yeah. And that's partially a result of the COVID pandemic as well. We went through furloughs during March, when the pandemic became a real issue. Well, it was a real issue before that, but when we started shutting things down. And we have not rehired all those positions yet. So my hope is that we grow again as we see, you know, the pandemic, with the vaccines coming out and the pandemic becoming less of an issue. And when we can have more confidence on our revenue side, we'll hope to grow again.
But you're hiring now.
We are, yes.
Can you tell us about those positions? Because they're very juicy.
Yes, so we have two roles coming up. The first one, digital marketing manager. And this was a role that was furloughed back in March. So we're bringing this role back. It's part of a four-person team, and there is actually a change in the organizational structure coming probably around April, where we will take our marketing team and separate it out from our programs team, and they will be serving both our development functions and programs team. One of the challenges that we have today is that we have multiple channels of communication going out from development and programs, the library, and we want to unify all of that. So this person supports that work as the digital marketing manager. So mostly around the social, as well as through, you know, whatever we put out on the website. And then we have the director of Climb United, which I'm really excited about. Climb United program, I would say, has three lines of work. One is around the route naming issue that's out there today, you know, the objectively horrifying route names that we have. And the role is to bring climbing community together. Our job here at the American Alpine Club, the way we see it, is we want to convene the conversation with the climbing community to ask what is appropriate and what is not appropriate. And we're going to bring the publishers together and help to bring the solution in terms of what is publishable and what is not publishable out into the world.
Sorry, yes. Can we rewind on that topic just for a second? Can you, for listeners who don't know, and I know this has been a publicized topic now a bit, even outside of Basecamp and outside of the outdoor industry, but can you give us a little background on how routes get named? Sorry, my baby is, she's very fussy about this topic.
Right. Yeah. She's upset about it too.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah. So tell us a little bit about how routes get named quickly, and then just a little bit about the controversy, just to fill readers, listeners in who don't know. Sorry, I'm an editor, so I can always say readers.
Yeah, absolutely. So in America, in the United States, climbing routes are named by the first ascensionists. So they'll climb it and they'll give it a route name. Those route names are then published into guidebooks and online aggregators of routes. Within that context, there are, I don't want to call it a handful, there's a large number of routes that have been named out there that are objectively, I don't know what to call it. It's horrifying, really. And I think for the most part, I don't think it's been done, again, with malintent. But I think within the culture of climbing, I don't want to call it appropriate, but it's been permissible. So yeah, climbing has, you know, a lot of objectively horrifying names out there, offensive names out there. I want to say about 6 months ago, and I want to give, you know, kudos to Melissa Utomo for bringing this up as a real issue within one of the online climbing routes aggregators out there. And that sparked the climate community to take a look at it and say, yeah, this is an issue, but the solution is actually really difficult, right? Because it's about climbing culture, it's about identity for those folks who put the climbs up, and then it's also about offensive and non-welcoming or inviting route names.
And it's difficult too because there really is no one authority to say, well, this is what we're going to do or not going to do. So it's just an ongoing fluid conversation. That
Exactly,
would
right.
that's a civil word for it.
Right,
Com
exactly.
yeah.
Yeah. There are some other countries in which there are authorities or organizations that say yes or no to a route name. We in the United States, I don't think that would work, and I don't think that's the direction we would want to go. And from my perspective, it's about bringing the community together. And my belief is that we all actually want to belong and feel good about the things that we do. And we need to just convene a conversation to say, these are things that are offensive or objectively offensive. These are not. And what is the middle ground that we can all agree on or we can all live with, maybe? Leaning into this conversation, I think the difficult part of this is that we will not go far enough for a number of people out there, and we will go too far for a number of people as well. So, what is that gray band in between to decide what's too offensive and what is not offensive, I suppose. And to bring the publishers together to decide on, what is publishable and what is not publishable, and to try to decipher the difference between intent and impact as well. So I think it's going to be a really difficult conversation. I think it's going to take us months and months, maybe years, to figure this out. And that's one line of work with the publishers and the route naming. And when we started this conversation around route naming, my real interest was around the culture that underlines the route names, right? Because from my perspective, route names are an expression of the culture. And so part of the role of the Climb United director is to convene a very broad set of individuals and brands from across the climbing industry and ask, well, how do we want to move forward as a community? And again, the American Alpine Club, just to convene the conversation and facilitate the conversation and come up with some standards for being a good citizen within the climbing community. With that said, one of the lines of work will be producing what we're calling a code of conduct. And we're not going to come out and say these are the, codes of conduct that you have to apply to or work with. I kind of see it more like a leave no trace principles, like where we have maybe a half dozen principles and we campaign that, and we're not going to force anyone to do this, but my hope is that people learn these, principles and abide by them because they'd just be better citizens.
Yeah, especially in a year where so many people are new to outdoor recreation, which is a lovely thing, but they are seeking out some sort of authority, helping them do so responsibly. So this will be a great resource for climbers both old and new.
Exactly.
Okay. And you do have a salary range published for this one, 64 to 72,000, which is negotiable. And this is really going to be a position, like you said, someone is going to have strong leadership. They're going to have to recognize that they're not going to make everyone happy all the time, but their job will be to really try to bring the community together as best they can.
Exactly. Yeah, I think it's going to take somebody with a lot of will and political savvy and ability to listen and just kind of synthesize and integrate everyone's thinking into something that we can all live with. I think it's going to be a very difficult and incredibly rewarding role.
I agree. And now, because you are remote right now, I believe, is this person going to be rooted in Golden, Colorado as well, or will they be remote for a little bit?
I think they're going to be remote for a little bit. My hope is that this person, my preference, I suppose, is that this person is in Golden or somewhere in the Front Range. The current way that it's structured, it's a 2-year role. It's funded for the next 2 years. My hope is that it's funded much longer than 2 years, because the problem or the challenge is much larger than something we can, even begin to solve in 2 years. So I'll be out. Going back out looking for funding, and my hope is that this becomes a role that is here always. And I do expect to bring our teams back into Golden after the pandemic.
Okay, and I imagine that you envision this person will have a lot of personal experience climbing, will be part of the community, will have some existing connections in the community as well.
I think so. I think it's important that, you know, this person has, well, climbing as part of their lifestyle, because I think it simply helps to inform the conversation for whoever this person is. I think the lived experience in climbing also helps to for the work group and for the larger, broader community to have confidence in this person as well. So I think it's important, but it's not, I wouldn't call it a requisite, but I do think it's important.
Okay. And then just going back to the marketing position for a moment, can you give us a bit more information about what level of career somebody would need to be for that role? And then a similar question, would climbing need to be part of their everyday lifestyle? How much of the outdoor rec personally would they need to do that marketing role?
Right. I think it's actually budgeted somewhere between 40 to 45,000, maybe 40 to 42,000 or so.
Okay.
And we don't see it as entry level. Maybe this is their second role within the marketing space in digital marketing. And for someone that wants to be in marketing as a career. So yeah, not your first job, but maybe it's your second job. Again, you know, we our preferences towards someone who is a climber or a mountain athlete of some sort. You know, that could be a lot of ski touring or trail running, sky running, climber. But that's not a requisite. You know, we want somebody with digital marketing chops more so than being immersed in the climbing community.
Excellent. Give us a little bit more insight into if somebody were applying for roles, are you the hiring manager, first of all? Are you looking at all the resumes, or is there somebody in each department looking at them? I know there's probably a different answer for each position.
Yes, there is a different answer for each position. I am not the hiring manager for either of these roles, and I'm not even sure that they're inviting me to be on the search team or the hiring committee,
Okay.
which is totally fine. For the digital marketing role, it's Shane Johnson. He is the lead on that, and then Misha Charles is for the director of Climb United, and I think that's in both of the job descriptions that are out there.
I did just see both of their emails are actually available in when you go to your website and click on the roles, you can access both of their emails. So yes, they are right in there, which is perfect.
Fantastic. Yeah, so with that said, I think kind of like the technical skills are in the roles. I think, you know, if I had any influence, and I think that I do, what's important to me is that there's, I would say, a congruence in values and beliefs, right? Like, do you love the mountains or do you believe in the mission of the American Alpine Club? And kind of some behavioral and personality things, like, do you have a sense of urgency and maybe restlessness to do something in this world? And do you have an impulse towards relationships, like building relationships and collaborating with your colleagues in the outdoor industry and the broader climbing community? And are you a person that lists the people around you, or do you see, you know, your colleagues as competition? Do you see the outdoor industry as competition? And so those characteristics are really important to me, and I hope the entire team here that, yeah, there's the technical components of the job, but like, what values and beliefs do you bring to this organization, and how are you going to elevate all of us?
That's fantastic, that last one. It's such an important part of your daily life if you're working with people where you feel they bring you energy and you can work with them happily and you're not worried about going in and maybe competing with the person next to you or with the organization next to you, which would be very stressful. So I appreciate you articulating that so well because it's something that I have not heard someone say out loud before,
Oh,
at least
yeah.
on this podcast. Yeah, that's really important. You briefly went into your own personal resume, and it has so many different pieces to it. You must have some excellent tips if somebody wanted to break into this industry. And typically, what that looks like is a student who maybe just completed their degree, sometimes in an outdoor industry MBA specific, or it can look like somebody that has 2 to 5 years of marketing experience. So they know they have the technical skills and they really want to work for an outdoor brand. Do you have tips for them?
I think it's about having real clarity about why it is that you want to be in this industry. I have met a number of individuals who are getting into this industry because they like the recreation component of it, right? They're climbers, they're skiers, they're trail runners, and that's what they want to do. And I often see people who are not separating that from their professional work and not recognizing that, yeah, we're in an industry that it's about passion and being outside, but we're also professionals, and this is actually work. don't treat this, your first role in the outdoor industry as less than a professional job. You need to show up with high quality work. You need to be timely with it, and you need to follow through on your promises. We're your friends and colleagues, and we want to climb and ski with you all. But we also need to know how to code shift effectively between when we're recreating and when we're in our offices and we're doing our jobs. And I think that understanding that shifting back and forth seems to be a challenge for at least a handful of people that I've met trying to break into the industry and succeed in the industry.
Well said. I think there is this picture, it's very romantic, of you're out there, you're skiing every day. I mean, it's not working in the outdoor industry is not skiing for 40 hours a week. That's
No, right.
called being a professional athlete if you'd like to
Right.
do that. That's a little different. But absolutely, I mean, the skills and the focus required for the jobs here are just like any other industry. So yes, you might be a bit closer to that recreation. Your boss might be a little bit more empathetic if you want to go get up if it snowed that day, and they might say, yeah,
Right.
take the day off. And maybe your employees have the same interests as you. But aside from that, you're right. It is still a job. You need to be just as serious about it and don't over romanticize, perhaps.
Exactly. Yeah, it's great. Like, it's a powder day. Go take a whole bunch of laps. But if there's a deadline tomorrow, you're doing it late tonight or
Right.
giving up the powder day.
Exactly. Was there anything else that we did not prompt that you would like to add about either the organization itself, about the roles individually?
I can't think of anything. You two are so good.
Oh, thank you.
Yes.
The only question I had was you mentioned there were about 22 staff members, but that you guys have, I think you said chapters across the country. So I'm just curious if those 22 are like chapter leaders as well. Around the country, or that if that's 22 staff is all in Golden.
Well, the chapters are all led by volunteers,
Okay.
members of the organization. And we have one person, Eddie Espinoza, who's in Seattle on the team that supports those chapters and all of those volunteers out there. The majority of the 22 staff are here in, well, not today, but would be here in Golden, during regular times, with a small handful dispersed around the country.
Sure. Okay, great. Thanks.
Excellent. I believe you said that you'll probably be hiring for both roles mid-January, so people still have time to get their applications in
Yes.
and can go right to the website to do that, correct?
Yes.
AmericanAlpineClub.org/jobs. And we'll put that in our show notes as well. But thank you so much for being here, for telling us about the organization. You're right. These are important roles, and what you do is exceptionally important for the community. So I can't wait to see what comes of this new position and of this new focus on equity in the climbing world.
Great. Thank you so much. And I just want to express my appreciation for the opportunity to be on your podcast, and talk a little bit about the American Alpine Club and the two roles that we have coming up.
Our pleasure.
Thank you so much.
That's all for this week, everyone. Thank you so much again to Mitsu from the American Alpine Club for letting us know about all of the changes coming to that organization, as well as the work being done for the climbing community in general. Such important work. And we really can't wait to see what comes of this new position that they're hiring for. We hope that you all have an absolutely wonderful holiday, however you are celebrating this year. And we will be back next week because the jobs are certainly not slowing down. They're not stopping, and we want to make sure we tell you all about them. Make sure you stop by the Facebook group this week and say hello. And we've been getting lots of great suggestions on who you'd like to hear from as guests, as well as the types of questions that you would like us to be asking our guests about. So that's really helping us inform our 2021 interview calendar, which we absolutely love. Head to outdoordreamjobs.com if you would like to be a guest, or if you'd like to suggest an organization to us that you would like to hear from, you'd like a little more insight into their hiring practices, or if you'd like to see anything else from the Basecamp community, hit us up. We're always listening and we love our community, and your ideas are usually better than ours. So we love hearing from you. Have a wonderful holiday, and we'll talk to you soon.